Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Member FDIC. Welcome into the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. Luke Stuckmeyer and David Kaplan in our NBC Sports Chicago studios. And at least once a week, we're going to try and bring you an interview podcast with a special guest. And we think our first one is exactly that. He helped build the Cubs from 1995 to 2011, taking over as the general manager in 2002. He's now a special assistant to Yankees general manager Brian Cashman. He is, of course, our guy, Jim Hendry. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Glad to be with you.
So what are your day-to-day activities like these days? How do things go for Jim Hendry now?
Well, I've got a really good situation. You know, obviously, I love working for Brian Cashman, you know, one of the elite GMs in the game the last 20 years. I've really a lot of variety to it. I go to spring training with the team and with Brian, and then during camp, I start seeing some guys at night, some of the higher picks coming out of the state of Florida, and maybe miss a day or two to camp to see guys. And then full-time April, May, all the way till the draft, I'm on the road seeing the top maybe 3 or 4 round guys in the drafts with Damon Oppenheimer, our scouting director, that's obviously done such a good job in New York for a long time. And then last summer was a little different because I coached the USA national team with Paul Maderi and Brian O'Connor for a month. But usually the first month after the draft, I'll evaluate our system for cash and try to rank our prospects to get ready for the trade deadline. And then I help with our trade deadline, you know, our trades in July. And then I'm either with the club the rest of the time in August, September, or I do a lot of work on the off-season free agents. You know, like if, you know, a year ago we're all, you know, seeing the same guys as pitchers 3 times and, you know, that's kind of tough. So it's a very good situation. I get a lot of hands, you know, a lot of irons in the fire with Cash, and he's a great guy to work with.
So when you go through a draft as a general manager, you know, you were a scouting director, you had to make those picks, but then when you become a GM and you guys take a guy like Javi Baez, you said mm-hmm. to me the other day, look, I went out and saw him, and Timmy and I kept that quiet until we made that pick, but when you're out on the road 250-plus days a year, the scouting director is the one that makes the pick. Is that a fair way to characterize the process?
Well, Cap, I think, you know, for the most part, you know, going back to when I did it and then there was a GM, it's different now, a little bit different now. We still, like, Brian Cashman has very little to do with who Damon Oppenheimer ever takes, or none to do with who he takes. And I tried to do it when I took it over. I was the farm director first and then the scouting director. You know, I worked for Ed Lynch and Annie McPhail. And when you're on the road that much, the old way of doing it was always, you know, hey, these are the guys out seeing the players. How would somebody in the office as a GM make the picks? It's changed a little bit, you know, for a lot of clubs, not us. The Yankees are still more of that traditional way. It's, you know, there's more analytics involved now. And we have a guy that's terrific, Scott Beneke, that helps us behind the scenes. And a lot of people do more work on video, which I have never been able to scout the same in video as I do in person. But for the most part, when I was a GM, John Stockstill was promoted when I was promoted to GM, and then a few years later I hired Tim Wilkin, as everyone knows, one of the best of the last 20, 25 years at doing it. So I always felt that Tim was out doing the work. We had a long-term relationship in the past. He's the guy that back-to-back years in Toronto took Carpenter and Roy Halladay in the first round, and they weren't in the first 20, my memory. So he had a great track record in Toronto for Pat Gillick. So I always thought Tim was better at it than I was, even when I was a scouting director. So why would I get in the way of his picks? We had a kind of relationship where he'd always keep me posted who he wanted, who he liked. I'd go see a few guys for him. I think he felt comfortable. And then, of course, I had to do the contracts and sign off on the money. But at the same time, I never, ever felt that Tim Wilkin was going to make a pick who I wanted. I wanted him to make the one he wanted. And in Hobby's case, I have clear recollection that was the last year I was here in 2011. Tim Wilkin loved Javi Baez and wanted to take him in the first round by the end of March. And I think he and I kind of sat on that for a long time. We kept it quiet. You know, obviously a good draft. Cole was in that, and Bundy and Lindor, just off the top of my head, those kind of guys I know were in that draft. Bauer. But that was Tim's guy, and I think we had him ranked. We were picking ninth, I believe, and I think Tim had Baez like fourth or fifth in the country. I mean, the draft's a funny thing. You know, that was the year of I think we had Bundy, one in the country, Cole maybe two. Everybody, you know, Kansas City gets ripped these days that Bubba Sterling hasn't turned out as well as he should have yet. He still may, because Kansas City's done a good job of hanging on to young people and develop them late. But everybody was enamored with him, so it wasn't a bad pick at the time. But Wilkin was definitely driving the train from day one on Javi.
Why was Rick so high on Javi? What do you remember about him saying, like, this is why this should be our guy?
Well, kind of the way it's turned out. Tim thought he had world-class bat speed, which he does.
Right.
And Timmy thought he was a potential gold glove winner at three positions, which he could be. You know, so it was just what he did well. Tim projected him the way it turned out. Now, of course, you have some bumps along the way, and, you know, people criticize him, you know, chasing too many bad pitches and doesn't walk enough and things like that. But his skills are so great, as proven this year. He's risen to, you know, MVP-type candidate status, and rightfully so. And he is exactly what Tim Wilkin thought he'd become. And not that we were the only smart team in the world. If he didn't go, I think we're in ninth, I don't think he gets past 12 or 15. I remember Doug Melvin telling me years later that Milwaukee loved him, and I think they were 12. But, he has become what Tim projected him to be. Not that it always happens that way, but in this case, it was kind of exactly how he thought. It would have some rough times, and he'd be inconsistent and things like that, but turn out to be a great player, which he has.
And the funny thing is, Jim, that I asked Jason McLeod about Javi Baez, and he said, look, I can't rewrite history. He said, I got to be honest with you. If the Cubs don't take him at 9, we are not taking him at 10. They took Corey Spangenberg. He said, we just had too many questions about Javi. He goes, and I remember having a beer with Tim Wilkin 2 weeks before the draft. I said, okay, whoever you take, if you take him, I can't get him. It's not like I can trade in front of you. Who are you taking? I'm taking a shortstop. He said, Timmy, good try, but Lindor will be gone before you pick. He said, I don't care if Lindor's on the board. I'm taking Javier Baez because he's the best damn bat in the draft. And Jason said, I was stunned. He goes, thank God he made that pick because I'm here in Chicago.
Yeah, and that story may be true. I remember a couple days before the draft, you know, I didn't see Tim until 4 or 5 days before we all, you know, met. I'd leave Chicago and met him in Arizona. But I remember he was worried a couple days before of somebody taking him before 9 and was trying to kind of downplay it to his friends or people that call in and see who you take. And he was trying to stay neutral and even threw a few deflections off. So maybe he felt real confident when he talked to Jason he'd be there, but maybe not so a couple days before. And I think that's a true story. My recollection, everybody loved Lindor, and obviously still should. But I will tell you, without talking out of school for Tim, we had Baez ahead of him in the draft.
And I think I called Tim Rick, which would make him a catcher for the Cubs way back in
Rick
the day.
Wilkins.
Yeah, that's right. And I was there my first year when we traded him for Luis Gonzalez and Scott Servais, Rick Wilkins.
How about that?
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, another guy he's a free agent this year, Josh Donaldson, drafted by the Cubs in 2007.
Yeah.
You traded him in the Rich Harden deal.
Right.
What caught your attention about him back in 2007 when he went in the first round?
Well, that I had nothing to do with that. He was a sandwich pick. You know, obviously, our scouts loved him. I think Sam Hughes was the cross-checker then and knew him well from Auburn. Obviously, he was a catcher at Auburn then. And I remember when O'Neary was telling us that he, Oneri Fleeta, that he thought he's going to have to go to third. And I remember the stories filtering my way that Josh wasn't real happy with that. He wanted to catch still. So we knew he was going to be a good player. Nobody on a non-projectable, incorrect side from us. We all thought he was going to be a big leaguer and an everyday guy. Nobody, you know, pounded on the desk and said, don't trade him. He's going to be a star and a you know, MVP type player. But at the time, as you remember, Rich, we were going real good, and Rich Harden was exactly what we needed to finish off the race and win the division. So it was one of those. Billy benefited from it. My recollection was that he wanted Sean Gallagher more than Donaldson. He was the key of that trade, and then Corey Patterson's brother was the third, who didn't have a great big league career by any means. So really, in the end of the day, it was Harden did his job for us, and Donaldson became a great player.
Donaldson was hitting .218 in Class A. He's a catcher. So you put him in that deal. Do you think Billy looked at him and went, I think there's a diamond in the rough? Or as you just said, no, Sean Gallagher actually was the real piece, and it just, the Cubs got lucky with Sandberg, it happened with Donaldson.
Yeah. I think Billy Bean and I did a lot of deals together, probably as many as I did with anyone. I think he knew Donaldson was going to be a good player, just like us. Like I said, we wouldn't have taken him in the sandwich pick if we didn't think he was going to be an everyday player. And I don't think anybody, if anybody in the industry thought he was going to be a superstar, then he wouldn't even have been mentioned in deals like that back then. You know, it just happens, you know.
Yep.
And we thought we had an everyday big leaguer. I think Billy thought that too. And I think Billy thought he got three good players for Rich Harden, as he should have. Rich Harden, when he was right, was really, really good and hard to hit.
Oh, absolutely he was. Jim, is that the hardest part about the job sometimes, is when you're in the hunt like the Cubs are now, weighing that balance between the present and the future? I mean, you knew you were getting a great guy in Matt Garza, but mm-hmm. you also knew Chris Archer was pretty good going the other way.
Right. We went the other way. We traded DeRosa for Archer in that deal, and Archer was only an A-ball, but the great Stan Zielinski, obviously, who has passed, he had his neck out there on Archer, even in A-ball, that he thought he was going to be traded. It is part of it, but I actually, as that part of the job, I like the trade part of it as much as anything. I love the deadline trades. We were good at it for a while, you know. And then at the end, when it's not going well and you have to take some chances in it off, with the Garza deal, it was an off-season deal that you felt like you had to try to fix it at the end quickly, or, you know, it wasn't going to work out. But in the earlier days, as you were building it, or in the 03 year or 07 or 08, the deadline trades are some of the most fun part of the job for me.
Time to take a break here on the Cubs Talk podcast. When we come back, we'll talk more with Jim Henry, the former Cubs general manager, now with the New York Yankees.
Cubs authentic fans, the My Teams app by NBC Sports is your home for Cubs highlights, articles, and more. For the best Cubs coverage anytime, anywhere, download the My Teams app today.
Welcome back to the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. We're talking with Jim Henry, the former Cubs general manager with the Cubs from 95 to 2011.
So Theo told a story that in 04, it's the deadline. He said, and he goes, when I tell you it's the deadline, he goes, it's not 9 a.m. of the deadline. It's like 2:57, and we're done in 3 minutes. He goes, and I've got the Expos, the Cubs, and the Red Sox on a three-way call. He said, and I will tell you, that deal probably doesn't get done if Jim doesn't take control. And Jim said, okay, hold on a second. Here's how this is going to go. I'm getting Garcia Para. You're getting Cabrera. You're getting these guys. He said, and then if Garcia Parra is hurt, I need one more piece. And he said, if my memory's correct, Sam Hughes said to you, ask for Matt Merton.
Yeah. Theo's telling it right. And the truth of the matter is, everybody, you know, it didn't come together. He's right. I dealt with Omar Minaya in Montreal for 2 weeks trying to get Cabrera first, and I couldn't get him. He wanted some people we wouldn't put in at the time. And Theo and I didn't even talk about Nomar till maybe a day or two before. And, you know, I didn't know if he was on Cabrera or not. And then the whole thing kind of happened. Omar kind of changed his mind and decided to trade Cabrera, where I personally would have loved to have had him 2 weeks before. But at the same time, we were very happy. We got Nomar and Merton that day. And we gave up Gonzalez and a few other pieces. But we felt like, as you remember, you know, the city was euphoric the day we made the trade.
Yep.
and Theo obviously got a tremendous player that helped him win that year. But on that day, we both thought it was a win-win for both of us. But his recollection's true. It came right down the wire, and I remember Sandy Alderson was in the commissioner's office, and he kind of held it up for a few minutes afterwards. We might not have made it by exactly three. I think Bud had to get involved. It was a pretty fun finish. It was kind of hectic and chaotic, but a lot of fun.
We're talking to Jim Hendry, former Cubs general manager from 2002 to 2011, now with the New York Yankees. Jim, another name out there that you guys picked up and you were a part of it, Wilson Contreras. Is it fun to even watch guys not being in Chicago now and see how their careers develop after you see them as just young kids?
Yeah, he was a kid I remember Oneri Fleeta raving about, and I didn't see him a whole lot, obviously, before I left, but I remember even when he was first, like, Rule 5 eligible, Oneri, I believe, and his staff converted him from an infielder to a catcher, and he did so well in Daytona in A-ball that it was tempting, even though he'd only been catching a short amount of time, to consider him, to take him right to the big leagues when I left as a Rule 5 selection. But yeah, he's a really good story, and one of the many. Like, if you go back and look at our Oneri's Latin American operation, I think we signed 24 total players in his stretch for less than $250,000 from Latin America that played in the big leagues, which is almost unheard of in today's day and age of how much money it costs to sign good players. But Contreras is a great story. He's a great athlete, as you guys know from seeing him every day. He could go out and play numerous positions on any day and be a real good major league player.
So I heard another interesting story that you had a rule that if you guys are going to spend more than, I think the number was $30,000, you got to call me before you commit that kind of money to somebody down in Latin America. And Starlin Castro and his uncle go to a Cubs tryout camp, and Jose Serra, who you hired, is there, and he said, yeah, I can give you 30. No, we're not going to take it. We're going to go off to Toronto's camp. They leave. He calls him back. You were on the air flying, and he said, all right, I'll give you the 40 grand you want. Just do it. And then he called you and said, yeah, I went 10,000 over, but I think I got a good player.
I think the story's right, but I think it was 50. It was 50 and 60. I think Oneri and I had told the scouts they went over 50. They had to check with us, and I think we signed Castro for 60. But that's true, and obviously that was one you don't want to get mad at the guy because he turned out to be well worth 60,000.
And then there's another great story that Carlos Zambrano himself told me. He said, dude, this is 100% true. He said, they get me into the States. He goes, I am literally living at a hotel, and Oneri tells him, you can go to that McDonald's, you can go to that Burger King, and right back to the hotel. And Toronto found him after you guys had signed him when he turned 16 and said, dude, where have you been? We've been looking for you. Oh, I was hanging out with the Cubs. Is that true?
Oh, Cap, you know I'd never do anything to sign off on that when he wasn't supposed to be there before the deadline. I think I'll just give Oneri credit for signing for $130,000 in Venezuela. That was a good sign.
That was a really good sign.
Speaking of Big Z, I saw that he's been trying to make another comeback. Jim, were you ever around a player that had passion like that? I mean, Chicago embraced Carlos Zambrano for such a long time. He was passionate on the field like I don't know if I've ever seen a player before, until maybe Javi Baez now.
Yeah, well, he was such a good story, like we just alluded to. We signed him at 16, and he did so well. He was a major league free agent at 26. So, you know, what he did in a short period of time by getting to the big league so quickly, I mean, it was a GM's dream when Wood, Pryor, and Zambrano were all healthy. And, you know, then Greg Maddux came to town, and, you know, it looked like we were going to be really good for a long time, and injuries and things took its toll. But he really, if you look at his career till his free agent year, he was on a tremendous, like, Hall of Fame pace. Innings eaten up, strikeout rates, ground ball rates, all the things you'd hang your hat on. And then for, you know, how many, who knows why, but after free agency and his larger contract, it was never quite the same as you might have projected from before 26. But he did have great passion. He wanted to win, and he was a heck of an offensive player. And obviously got off the track at some times in his career also after that. But, you know, in his early 20s and up to 25 or 6, you were looking at a you know, you thought was going to be a 10-year perennial All-Star, and he still was more than serviceable, but didn't quite, you know, exceed to the standards that we thought he would have.
Hey, how good is Gleyber Torres? Because I know Theo said, look, it's if not now, when? And they end up making the deal with your Yankees for Chapman. They win the World Series, but Gleyber Torres is going to be a great player for a long time.
Yeah, he really is, and Theo was dead right. He did exactly what he needed to do. Great trade for the Cubs. You know, Chapman obviously helped and contributed greatly to winning the World Series. And we knew that it was going to take the Cubs' best prospect to get Chapman. There were four or five clubs all in the same boat that had a chance to win. We traded Andrew Miller to Cleveland, and you end up facing each other in the World Series. But to get Gleyber, and Billy McKinney was a decent part of that trade. And helped us, you know, get some guys this year at the deadline. And at the same time, we were fortunate enough to sign Chapman back. So if you wrote a script of how it's supposed to work, Theo made the great last piece to get Chapman and win. We got Chapman back and a great player, Torres, who will be an All-Star for years to come.
That'll do it for this edition of the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. We'll have more with our interview of Jim Hendry in our next episode, including his recollections of signing Ted Lilly from a hospital bed, getting a World Series ring from the Cubs, and one Hall of Famer who Hendry was convinced could have been a Cub if not for the presence of one man on their roster.